Welcome to another broadcast of the Word for Life radio program. And with me back today in the studio is Dr. Les Olala, Chancellor of Northern Baptist Bible College. Doc, you've been away for a number of our broadcasts on a missionary venture, on a trip where you were out ministering to a group of pastors. And we've been praying for you, and we're glad you're home safe. And maybe you could take just a few minutes and tell us how it went.
Good. Well, thank you. I'm very, very conscious in any ministry opportunity of the prayers of God's people and the empowerment that God can give. Physically, we realize that we were very limited at our best. And when we approach these opportunities, we cast ourselves upon the Lord. And this particular trip was in the Philippines to Manila. Still very tumultuous place, politically in turmoil because they're trying to oust the president. And the terrorists have great footholds in there, the bombings that were there, in fact, right where we were staying in that same region. So it's a lot of inspections, a lot of bomb-sniffing dogs. And,
wow. Now, you were with a group of—
We went and ministered to the group of pastors.
Okay.
And the local Filipino pastor really was the one who coordinated. It was called the 16th Fundamental Bible Conference in Metro Manila. So Pastor Livioco, native Filipino, got saved. In fact, he and his wife graduated. They both graduated from the top universities in Philippines. She was instrumental in him getting saved while they were in college, and he tied in with a Bible study group at that point. And they were discipled by an older guy who taught them the importance not only of growth but also of separation from that which would lead them into a wrong direction and a wrong philosophy.
Now, did he start the church there?
Yes, he started the—
So how many pastors would you say were there? How many people were there?
Oh, you know, I don't know. There were hundreds of people there. How many of them were actually pastors? It was quite a number because they even some came from India for this conference. There will
now,
be
this
some
is
who
your
will come.
Second time to go to this conference?
Yeah, to the same conference. And we started at 6 in the evening and went till 9:30 at night. And then, of course, you know, you fellowship afterwards, so rarely would I get in bed before midnight.
Yeah, I'm sure you ate late, too. I know, going over that part of the world, you eat supper at 10, 11 o'clock at night.
Right, and you don't know what time it is when you get there anyway.
Yeah.
So I was preaching when I should have been sleeping and vice versa.
Well,
but
I know.
It was a good, it was a fruitful ministry. I'm very satisfied in the receptiveness of the people, the hunger of the people. I have a very tender note in my pocket now from a pastor just pleading for prayer partners in ministry. Very honest. He said, I realize I want all five of my boys to surrender to ministry. And there's a price tag there.
Yeah.
Because you've been in enough countries that are away from the American comfort level to know that Christianity is a big commitment to them. Yes. It's not just a wink and let's go back to our comfortable lifestyle.
We'll certainly be praying with you. I did have a question that I've thought about for a while, and some of it's coming out of ministries that we're all a part of and each of us trying to see, which is the whole reason you went over there, to equip these people to give the gospel. Sometimes you get to parts of the world or sometimes even in your own family where you look at a person and you wonder, is this person ever going to get saved? Is this person so hardened that they will not hear the gospel? And I wonder, in your experience, what have you seen to be the hardest case of a person who has come to Christ eventually?
Well, I think as far as when we were in meetings, the song leader's daughter who ran off with this Hell's Angel guy, in fact, in the prayer request, said if they ever entered the door of a church, it would be a miracle, much less ever get saved. And 8 days later, they were both saved.
Wow.
In fact, it was in that second Sunday night service. And then they were both baptized together. In the 31st night of that meeting, we were there for 31 days. That was a hallelujah. But I think probably the worst case I've ever seen is in Luke chapter 8. The man we know is the maniac of Gadara. I was speaking at a prison ministry national banquet, and there were several hundred policemen, prison workers, all of the people who are involved in the penal systems. I spoke that night because so many of those people were unsaved. I spoke on the topic of how to reduce recidivism in our prisons.
From this passage.
Yes, from this passage. And that's why I preached on the maniac of Gadara.
Oh, man.
And I said, you know, there were many attempts made to change this man's social behavior.
I'll bet.
And he was a repeat offender every time. And I said, but something happened that reduced the recidivism. And that's what I want to speak on. So I think it would be good for us to tear the passage apart.
Look at that. This is in Luke 8.
Luke chapter 8. Christ, you know, you study his ministry. The Gospels show his background.
Right.
We look back from where he had come from. Then we see his birth recorded. Then after his birth, his boyhood. And then we see him at his baptism.
Right.
And then after his baptism, instantly a battle with Satan began. Mm. Mm. And then after that 40-day battle and victory, he began his public ministry in Capernaum.
Mm-hmm.
When he went to Capernaum and there were miracles there, he took ship across the Sea of Galilee and encountered a storm. We find two storms in the passage where Christ is early in his public ministry. And we will start looking there in Luke chapter 8 and verse 22. And it came to pass on a certain day, he went into a ship with his disciples. And he said unto them, let us go over unto the other side of the lake. And they launched forth. And as they sailed, he fell asleep. There came down a storm of wind on the lake, and they were filled with water and were in jeopardy. I believe this storm was caused by Satan. The other storm where Jesus walked on the water, where he said, peace be still, I think he prayed that storm up to test the disciples, because he had gone in the mountain to pray. And then this storm came up, and then he said, peace be still. In this case, we find it a lot different. And they came to him in verse 24 and awoke him, saying, Master, Master, we perish. Then he arose and rebuked the wind and the raging of the water, and they ceased, and there was calm. Which makes me think that Satan knew where he was going, to where he had a stronghold, and he knew the power of Christ by the testimony of the demons inside of this man. There may have been an attempt to stop him from going over there, and Christ rebuked this. But then we find a much greater storm. One was raging on the Sea of Galilee. The other was raging within the soul of a man. And it's the storms raging within the souls of people for whom we are burdened that really cause our concern.
They crush. They are crushing burdens.
There may be a dad. It may be a mom.
Or a wife.
And we get to a point where we think this is impossible. Maybe a child has opted to go a direction completely contrary to God's will.
Mm-hmm.
And we begin to think this is impossible. That person cannot and will not ever change. And we develop a hopeless philosophy. Well, this passage ought to be a great comfort to anyone, no matter how desperate the situation may seem to be.
And you know, Doc, we have listeners, I'm sure, who are going through exactly what you just described with a child or a sibling or a spouse, and just maybe their hearts are at the point of breaking. What would the passage say to them?
Well, I think when we take it apart, I believe it'll be a great comfort to realize that their situation is not unusual. Rare is the situation where some family does not know someone in their history or in their immediate situation where they know there's a great deal of heartache.
What was this man like? I mean, how bad was he?
Well, let's start into this. Here Christ comes in verse 26, and they arrived in the country of the Gadareans, which is over against Galilee, and went forth to land, and there met him out of the city. This man was, keep in mind, he was from the city.
Okay.
He had one time lived, obviously, a normal life in the city.
Right.
Before he became inhabited by these demons, which had devils a long time, wore no clothes, neither abode in any house, but in the tombs. When he saw Jesus, he cried out and fell down before him, and with a loud voice said, what have I to do with thee, Jesus, thou Son of God Most High? I beseech thee, torment me not. Interesting language from
a demon-possessed
from
man.
From a demon-possessed man. These devils knew who he was. So first I put the condition of this man, his miserable condition. We see first he was unclean. He was possessed of devils. He had devils a long time. He was unclean. Well, that's not unlike how we were born.
Right.
We were born in a miserable condition.
Totally alienated from God.
Absolutely enemies. Void of any righteousness. Enemies of God. Mm-hmm. No mm-hmm. cleanness within us. All of our righteousness is as filthy rags. The best we can produce is filthy rags.
Wow.
So we can identify with the fact that there was uncleanness. That is manifested in various ways. And total depravity is manifested in different ways, depending on the structure in which that person was raised. Not as bad as he could be, but not as good as he should be.
Right.
You see,
right.
That's why you can have men, people born totally depraved who are living lives that are socially acceptable. They're not as good as they could be, but they're...
And they take comfort in the fact they're not as bad as the person next to them or the person down
right.
on Skid Row.
It makes them think they're not totally depraved.
Yeah. Well, this guy was about as bad as you could get. I mean, when you're running around in the tombs, and I think the text says that he didn't have any clothes.
Right. He was. I said he was running in his one-button suit in the tombs. I said, so next thing, he was unclothed. Not only was he unclean, that was an inward heart condition.
Sure.
External demonstration, he was unclothed. And we could park on that point today for a while. All you have to do is go into
the malls
sometimes, and you realize that. A lot of demon activity going on, and we're not going to park on that, but that is a point. Interesting, in these cultures that are no clothes wearers, when they become God's children, it's evident they put clothes on.
Yeah.
There is something that is within them that causes them to cover.
They become modest.
They become modest-oriented. But he was very socially maladjusted, might we say. I don't think you need any great textbook in sociology to figure that much out. Then he was uncontrolled. He was uncontrolled in verse 29, for he had often commanded the unclean spirit to come out of the man, for oft times it caught him, and he was kept bound with chains and in fetters, and he brake the bands and was driven of the devil into the wilderness. Mm. So not only was he unclean, unclothed, he was uncontrolled, restless. And if you know loved ones, if you know people for whom you're praying, if you know they're restless, they shift their weight from one foot to the next. They cannot sit still. They cannot sit in a church service. They are running to and fro.
Yep. They're internally agitated.
Bible even speaks of the wicked are like the sea tossed. Mm. They're restless, uncontrolled. And then he was unconverted. Verse 30. And Jesus said, "What is thy name?" And he said, "Legion," because many devils were entered into him. He was completely inhabited, obviously an unconverted man.
Mm-hmm.
And these are the four things how I described the miserable condition of this man. And our ministries are facing this all the time.
Yeah, people are like this.
Meeting people in a miserable condition, unclean, unclothed, uncontrolled, unconverted.
And the exciting thing is he didn't stay this way.
No.
And that's what our next broadcast will be about because we're out of time this time around. So thank you so much, Doc, for sharing this with us. We look forward to our next broadcast, and we encourage those of you who listen to us on a regular basis to contact us. May the Lord bless you until the next time that we're together.